Hello and welcome to another episode of the Classic Pinball Podcast. My name is George, and today I'm joined by my co-host Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hello, George.
Yes, it's been a long time, Dave. I have quite a few items on the sheet today. But the first item, Dave, is to thank you for doing a great job with our last podcast, The Pinball Asylum. But I have a question.
Okay.
Eric mentioned that he acquired, if I heard correctly, 10 games from Papa. Did you hear what I heard?
I did not hear that. I didn't. I know he has a bunch of games, but I didn't know they got anything from Papa.
Okay, then I'm got to go back and listen to it. But there's another question. With Papa, how did Eric, if he did buy a game, how did he get, or why did he get contacted?
If that happened, because I think he's like on the inner circle there of high-end players, maybe.
I've heard other podcasters talk about getting games from Papa. Jeff Teolis said he bought a game. I think he bought an Ali. Bruce Nightingale, I think he said he bought a game. I'm sure there's others. I can't remember. It was real quick. He talked about it real quick. But how many games does Eric have?
I think he has, I want to say at least 8.
Okay. Next time you talk to him or next time we have him on, we can ask him about that. I want to thank him and David Denholtz for taking the time out of their busy schedules to talk to us. I thought it was a great episode, and actually our fans like it as well. One of the better episodes we did out of our marathon 7 in a row. The other one being hot dogging, people seem to like that. You and I have talked about it in the past on a couple of phone calls about the others not doing as well, a couple we can identify. I don't understand the Bobby Orr one. That's one I definitely don't understand. I would have thought more people would be into that, but shows you what I know.
Yeah, I think I did a YouTube vid on that too, but I explored more in depth about him getting away from the Bruins and going to the Blackhawks and that kind of thing. I more so than our podcast. I went into a deeper dive into it. I wish I kind of did the deeper dive actually on our podcast, but it's out there on my YouTube channel.
It is what it is. So second item on the sheet, everybody's talked about the Pinside outage. I'm not going to ask you about that, but it reminded me of an interface I think I had on Pinside, or maybe it was something on YouTube, where I was thinking about the Bobby Orr podcast we did and talking about Mike Pasak and buying, you know, the boxed playfield. So I went back out and watched American Pickers, that specific episode. And if you have or haven't watched it, basically Mike's brother, not Frank, the heavyset guy, the other guy's brother, crawled up into the rafters and pushed down to Frank a cabinet, an Evel Knievel cabinet with a playfield in it. And he was thinking about making it into a cocktail table. And I made the comment of, wow, for $100, that's a pretty good thing. God, I got jumped on wherever I was. That wasn't a regular Evel Knievel cabinet and playfield. That was the home version. And I said to myself, oh, that's right. There was a home version, yeah, but yep, I didn't realize that was actually made by Bally or Bally. Let's see.
Oh, yeah.
Say it again. Bally.
The Bally police are going to get you.
Yeah, they're in full force out there. So do you know anything about the home versions of Bally games?
I do. Yeah, pinball was super popular, of course, in the 70s. And so much so that people wanted their own in their house, but they, you know, they didn't want to pony up the big money for you know, the real arcade version. So Bally put out these ones, I think it's through the Sears catalog.
I believe you're right. I do remember this when the late 70s. There were a couple $400, $500.
Yeah, $300 or $400 when a real game was like about $1,500, you know? So like one.
You're correct. Correct.
Yep. And they did like, I think about three games. They had a Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. I think they called that, right? That's called the Captain Fantastic. I forget. But they had that one. They had a Fireball and they had Evel Knievel. And then I think they also had, someone else made a Galaxy Ranger, which I think is also them as well. And I don't quote me on that one. I think that was it for that, for Bally for making those. But they sold pretty well. They still kind of run to this day. I've actually had a couple customers come to me with them that, you know, I kind of shy away from because you really can't find most of the parts for them, although some parts are actually from the real arcade version. So some stuff does go over, but the board set itself, nope. But sometimes I have been able to resurrect those and make them playable and make them nice again. But there's not a lot of money there, you know, because it's really not a, you know. So it's unless someone's really in love with it and they have good memories of it and they really want it for a keepsake kind of thing, you know, then they'll, you know, throw some money. Otherwise, not really worth it.
Right. Like I said, they were buying it to make a cocktail table out of it for $100. It might have been a little overpriced, but again, it's reality TV. Who really cares? The other piece of the show was Frank buying two Kiss back glasses, the German version and the American version. I think he paid $400 for two of them. They were in okay shape. So, you know, that was basically the show. Nothing great. You know, they bought some amusement park. They bought a bumper car and one of those rides that, you know, went up and down on hydraulics that looked like a rocket ship. You know, some stuff like that. But Pasak's got quite the warehouse of stuff, and I'm being polite. I mean, it was just stacked everywhere. So be fun to go through that place.
It would. Yeah. He's got a lot of, you know, what's he, king of the advertising for pinball machines, the flyers and that kind of stuff he has.
He had filing cabinets as far as you could see of paperwork. He must own every piece of paper in the world.
Yeah, I think so.
Lots of back glasses as well.
Yep, a lot of back glasses. And I think, I don't know, I guess he is selling some stuff off these days, but he actually was, you know, collecting a lot of stuff. I don't even know how many games he has.
They only highlighted a couple, and I don't remember. But I want to get to the next item about Evel Knievel, which was yesterday. You know, we've talked about this before, the captain's auctions.
Oh, yeah.
That went off Friday and Saturday. And there were a couple of games that stood out in the pinball, which were few and far between in comparison to past auctions. And we'll get to the pinflation and, you know, how much games are costing now. But one game, Evel Knievel, I'm not going to go through the pricing game with you. I only have a couple of them. $3,400 plus a 15% buyer premium. So $3,400 hammer plus add, what, another $460 on top of that? That's a $4,000 game. And it was, as he described it, a player's game.
Really?
Never heard the word collector's game. Every game I heard was, you know, the famous line, bright and tight, or player's game. Here's the one, and we'll talk about yours in a couple of minutes. Circus Voltaire.
Hmm.
Definitely dirty rubbers. Definitely needs a Dr. Dave's Day Spa. Hammer price, $7,900.
Wow.
Add another $1,200 in buyer's premium.
I let mine go cheap then.
Again, West Coast. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
Here was one I thought was okay priced. A Medusa for $3,200. new back glass, brand new painted cabinet, brand new play field, brand new plastics. I didn't think that was too bad out of all of them.
Not too bad. But again, you know, who painted the cabinet, who did the play field swap? There's all kinds of factors in that too that can really affect it.
How about it's not a live auction? You're buying something with a picture on a tube or on a screen.
Yeah.
A lot more difficult to do.
Time me up.
two other games, and I don't know if you're familiar with either one of these. I did have the opportunity to play one of them. A couple of games by Sonic out of Madrid, Spain. Are you familiar with these games?
I've heard of Sonic, but I don't. I might have played a couple. But like nothing really comes to mind, though.
Butterfly was the one that I played, and that went yesterday for $900, which was good money for an EM, I would say. Not great, but the reason I bring it up is not because of the game. Their play fields were made out of polyurethane.
Okay.
Kind of ahead of their time, kind of competing with poly, I guess, back in that time frame with their, you know, more plastic. I don't know what the formal term is, but they're plastic play fields.
I'll tell you exactly what that was. That was a fiberglass play field.
Okay. So interesting that they were experimenting with that back then. So there's the Evel Knievel story. I guess that leads me to you parting with several games recently.
Yes.
The Circus Voltaire, which we did an episode on the game, number 42. And Abali Williams' Star Trek, both have left the building, huh?
They have, yeah. It was cash in hand, you know, could I have gotten more for them, both of them? Sure. I didn't really advertise either one of them. And I don't know. The guy called me up, right place, right time, him and his friend. And I said, all right, why not? I need the space anyway. And I didn't put them on my website or anything, but, you know, it's I made money. I didn't make a killing, but I made money, so that's good. And I have more space. And I just, this happens every time. Whenever games leave here, don't wait too long because there'll be another game or two coming in. So I just picked up a second Twilight Zone to add to my my stock.
They are going for crazy, crazy money from what I understand.
And I don't understand the Star Trek Next Gen, it doesn't get as much love out there pricing-wise, and I'm really surprised because after I restored that one up, it came out really nice, and I wasn't really a fan of the game until I redid mine, and I was playing. It's like, you know, this is a really good game, especially if you're a Star Trek fan and of that Next Generation series. A lot of good quotes, a lot of good, feel like very immersive in the game and feel like you're, you know, on the show, kind of. And I don't know, I really, and plus the little nuances, the Easter egg stuff with the left button, right button, both together. This whole code you can put in for several things, but one of them you do will actually bring up all of Steve Ritchie's games he did for Williams and for Atari. So all of a sudden, boom, on the screen will come up, you know, Superman, Flash, all this stuff. And I have a color DMD in that game. Plus I put in Mirror Blades. I put in Invisiglass on the game and some warm LEDs throughout it and some other select color LEDs here and there. And it is really, and oh, I put a subwoofer on it too. So
sounds like somebody got a very, very nice game. Unfortunately, our paths couldn't or didn't cross during the time you had it, just didn't work out for a variety of reasons. But it sounds like a really nice game.
And it's one of the few games that had the DCS sound system, so its sound is really good compared to even Twilight Zone, because Twilight Zone doesn't have the DCS as far as I know, so the sound is good, but not as good as the as Star Trek Next Gen.
DCS is?
Digital Computer Sound, I think.
Some brand name for their sound system.
Their sound system, yeah, it's kind of cleaner, you know, more responsive, more what's it called, dynamic range, I guess.
Yeah, fuller field.
Yeah.
You know, less compression.
Right, less compression. There you go. I think that's part of it. Yep. Yep.
People are going to wonder a little bit about you first because you're starting to move into liking games that aren't Stern or Bali classics. But more, I'm getting the sense that you might have a little buyer's remorse or seller's remorse, pardon me.
Yeah, a little seller, not so much for the Circus Voltaire. I was done with that one. But for the Star Trek Next Gen, it was a real...
Oh, no love for Circus Jerry? Come on.
No, Circus Jerry, no. No. It was a good game, but I don't get the hype with that game. You know, Star Trek should get so much more love, I think. But yeah, it's not like it's not crazy prices like a TZ or Adam's Family. Those get crazy prices.
Well, you're kind of leading into one of the other items on the sheet, which I alluded to earlier, Pinflation. We've been talking about this for quite some time, and you know that I listen to other podcasters. They're all talking about supply and demand, the amount of games being made, how fast they're being made, and that the expansion of the pinball hobby for a variety of reasons. I definitely am in agreement with most of those things. It definitely is looking like the market is just expanding and there's so few games out there. And I did look for the first time in a couple of days out on Facebook, even, you know, following Pinside Marketplace. Their games are going for a lot more money than I ever imagined. I saw, what's that one? Dr. Dude for $4,000.
Oh, really?
That used to be like a $1,300 game.
Yeah, not that good of a game.
No, but you're making my point. It's, and that's, you know, we talk about prices all the time and we're not the only one, but Pinflation is here, and I think it's because people are chasing too few games, and it dovetails to what we heard from Grant King in Australia. Do you remember? I wrote it down so I would recall it. Do you remember what he said about pricing in Australia?
Refresh my memory. I think he said it was crazy prices, but besides that, I don't recall.
I did the conversion. He said that he bought a quote-unquote trashed game for $4,000 Australian. Mm. And then ended up putting another $3,000 Australian to bring it up to speed. Now, he didn't identify the game, but in U.S. dollars, that's $3,100 for a game. And then he put another $2,300 into the game on top of that. So it kind of goes with my argument of, I'm guessing in Australia, there are more people chasing fewer games. That's why the price point is so high. And if you were to buy a new game, and I forget what they said on one of the podcasts, what it cost for an imported Stern game, but it's some crazy astronomical amount of money in comparison to what we pay here because of the freight getting it from the U.S., you know, to Australia.
Well, here's a good data point as well. Years ago, maybe, 15, 20 years ago, people were buying container games, like a whole container from Europe of all the 90s ramp games, you know, all the DMD stuff. And you'd be getting them for maybe almost, when you're all said and done, $800 a piece, I mean, $1,000 a piece tops. You probably get about 20 or 50 games in this big container, and you know they'll be dirty and whatever, smoke filled, you know, cigarette smoke, but once you clean them up, they were nice stuff, and they were re-imports, so people, you know, would kind of poo-poo them when they were trying to sell them. It's like, oh, it's not a real sold in America one, and it's been converted. So things have changed. Now people don't really care that much about the import because it's all converted over anyway. You can easily change it to an American one, put a new coiner on it, and you know, and it's fine. But now even more so, now the games are now being exported back out to Europe again. Europe has a big calling for games now. They want the games. They want, so now people will have containers of games going to Europe.
I think it again reinforces what I just said, which is many people chasing fewer games, price point goes up. It's supply and demand. It's nothing more than that. And, you know, one of the podcasts talked about Stern and saying, imagine if Stern wasn't in the market, or, you know, wasn't a business producing four games a year. What kind of demand would that put on all the other manufacturers, but more importantly, the used market?
Yeah, because right now they're having, well, they're not going to, they're having probably with supply chains, I would think Stern is, so they're not going to really source stuff to make new things. And on top of that, their stuff that's on the line already is selling really well because people will look scrambling for games. The home market still wants games. So they don't really have to put out three or four titles a year right now as they were the past couple of years. They can kind of sit in their laurels and just keep making what they got, and people are still buying. That's what
they could go back into their back inventory, correct, but they keep moving forward. My point is, if Stern did not exist, they weren't making thousands of games a year, people's demand would still be there. They'd have to go to other manufacturers, which aren't producing as many, or to the used market, which would be more people chasing fewer games. I could make the point five ways to Sunday, but I think you understand what I'm getting at. It's right now, it's a seller's market. If you have a non-EM, unless it's something highly collectible, but a decent solid state game, you're going to make money on it, especially people like you and I who collected 20 years ago. I just look at it, but Janice is right. She's like ready to shove them out the door. She's like, we need the space. Get them out of here.
Wow, like, really?
No. That's not why I bought them. I bought them because I play them. They're not museum pieces. I use them every day and I play. And I wanted to ask you, have you, other than the games you've been repairing, and this is a good segue into Dr. Dave's adventures, have you been playing any of your own games, or has it strictly been customer games and bring them back up to speed?
It's pretty much strictly been customer games. I've been so busy with it, like 7 days a week these days and long hours at it, that I've been getting my pinball fix playing my restored customers' games, or after doing a day spa, playtesting, and the ones in my shop, restoring and playtesting those and having a blast with them. Even the Star Trek Next Gen, I just played the piss out of that one for like several weeks. And I was trying to get myself sick of the game so I wouldn't mind selling it. I was trying to really get tired of it. And I wasn't getting tired of it. I was getting, okay, I was getting the hang of it. I was, getting Wizard Mode and whatever else was on the game, Final Frontier and that kind of thing. So for my own collection, I just visited him last night for a quick little jaunt. I asked Maureen, hey, let's play some pinball tonight on my collection. What do you, and so she said, let's play the oldies. So we played Kingpin, 1973 Gottlieb Kingpin. And I said, yeah, you want to play the old one? I'm like, all right. So we played that. That was fun. One player game at peace. And we kind of went after chase each other on score. And then after that, I decided to play some, out of the whole lineup of up there, I had Kingpin, Xenon, Flash Gordon, Fathom, 8-Ball Deluxe. I decided to go for a Xenon. And I like the game. Some people say, simple game, not really much going on compared to the other games I have. But there's something about Xenon that I like, because I have a lot of childhood memories with that one, being at the Funny Games Arcade I used to frequent. And that was there. And actually the mascot for Fun and Games is the Xenon character on the back glass. So I felt like but otherwise, typically what I do to wind down after a day of pinball, I've been going to my video game stuff. I've been going to play Battlezone almost every night.
Well, that's a great game. I want to stop you for a sec so I don't forget.
Sure.
We did do obviously a Xenon podcast, and I didn't have time to go back and listen, but tell me the woman's name who did the voice.
Susan I want to say Cianci.
Oh, see? It's you.
What? Oh, what'd I say?
Yeah. We made a mistake again.
Okay.
Because I did the same. I said the same thing.
And it's wrong.
That's not her name.
Susan Vega. No.
No. It's Susan Cianci. And the only reason I know this is I got an email the other day for this new documentary, great name, and she's part of it, called Sisters with Transistors. Okay. It's the early pioneers of electronic music.
Oh, that was her. That was Susan. That was,
well, she's one of the women that's talked about in this documentary. Okay. I have not seen it, but I loved electronic music as a kid. The first one, whether you call, well, he was, no, they were known as Walter Carlos, now Wendy Carlos, back in, I think, 67, 68. But obviously Rick Wakeman, who else? Emerson, Keith Emerson. I used to like a band called Tonto's Expanding Headband. What's another electronica? Ever listen to Triumvirate? That was another prog band, kind of electronic based. But anyway, it talked about, you know, these pioneers of electronic music, and I guess up to date. So interesting, but I think we both gaffed on the name, and I don't know why, but I called her Cianci as well.
Would Alan Parsons Project be considered that?
Parts. I'm a big Alan Parsons fan, but no, there are deeper. I should have gone through my record collection. I've got some really rare, crazy, early 70s, late 60s electronica. I know one. Here's one, and I'll include it in the show. Do you remember the song Popcorn?
Yes, I do. Oh, yeah.
Right? Yep. So that would be considered early electronica or electric Moog synthesizer, whatever you want to call it. You're getting all the points, Dave. Where did you read my notes before we got on today?
I mean, I did not. Well. There is actually
good segues here. So let's get to you.
Well, I want to go back one more. Women in electronica music and so forth. There's one woman here. Her name is Jennifer Murphy, and she's got a pretty cool little vibe here. Let's see.
Maybe I too could be ninja.
Yeah.
This one. I want to be ninja.
You're hitting on all cylinders. Are we going to, and if you are ready, I'm going to yell at you. Are you already having a beer?
No, I have not had a beer.
Okay. I would like to have one. So if you forgive me, I'd like to go grab one, and you'll understand why I'm grabbing this beer.
Well, you know what we should do? We should both grab a beer, and it could be like the old nuclear sub movies where, you know, turn your key, sir. You got to turn it at the exact same time.
Okay. We can pop the key, as they say.
Yeah, so I'll get one too. I'll be right back with you.
2 seconds.
All right.
I'm back. Okay, tell me when you want to do the Pop Top Symphony.
Here we go.
6, 5.
Sir, we have a launch order.
3.
Put your hand on the key, sir.
1. Launch.
Launch. Good. Turn your
key. Sir, we have a launch. Turn your key.
Oh, I returned mine on.
All right.
Turn there. Key, I
turned my key. I think we turned
it. Okay, now I got to tell you why I wanted to have a beer.
Okay.
Janice bought this today. It's from Kettlehead Brewing Company in Tilton, New Hampshire.
Yep.
The name of the beer is Nunchuck Ping Pong Double IPA.
No way. That goes along with my ninja girl.
I know. That's what I said.
Wow.
You're hitting them all today. And
that's wild.
We didn't talk about this. So this is pretty good. I have a question while I'm pouring. I'd like to ask you a question about one of the games that you recently did a day spa on.
Yes.
Wide Body Pokerino. What's that game like?
Pokerino. Not really well loved, but there are some fans out there. This particular customer, he's had it for a long time. He's nursed it to health here and there, but it's, you know, he finally said, you know what? I want to keep this game for a long time, passed down to my kids, and I want you just to, you know, go through it. And, you know, so basically I'm giving it a multi, I don't want to bring it in house because it's so big and I have no room here. So I've been going to his house once so far to start out, and I'm going to go back again. But yeah, it looks like it's a great game. You know, it's nice artwork and so forth, but there's not a heck of a lot going on with it. Like it even has five balls in it, but the problem is the top four balls up there, they're just like the click-clack balls. So the what's it called? Newtonian ball. You hit the ball with your ball and one of the balls goes around and waits and goes another. So four balls go and wait. Once you get them all the way around, the thing releases and they go back again. But there are four captive balls in the same area.
So what are you moving, like the balls from one area to another?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like one of those games, Williams game, I want to call it Aladdin. You've seen the Williams games in the center thing, in the center that has a bunch of balls there, and you hit them one area and they go to the other side. You've seen those old Williams games?
No, that's kind of why I asked you about this game. No, I'm not familiar. I didn't even know Williams made Wide Bodies. I've heard the name of this game before, but I went and looked.
Well, yeah, Stellar Wars. That's a great Williams Wide Body. Okay. The problem with Williams Wide Bodies is their palm rest bar, the lockdown bar, is like the bumper to a 57 Buick. And it hurts your hands. It's like sharp corner edges that dig into your hands when you're playing for a while. They didn't have the nice rounded edges like the Bally's or the Sterns. Said, no, we're going to put this like a Buick chromed hardened corner bumper on this thing. And you kids have fun.
Sounds painful.
Yeah, it is a little painful.
What other games have you worked on in our extended hiatus?
Well, let's see here. We have done since March 22nd, did a Card Whiz shop job. These are all on site stuff. I did a Getaway. It's a ramper. Did a Adams Family in Rhode Island. Bedford, New Hampshire, did a Last Action Hero. And after that, all the way out to Williamstown, Massachusetts. That's like North Adams. That's the corner of New York, Vermont, Mass, up there. Long drive. For an EM, mind you, that's up in the third floor attic of this old house. Why did I go do this, are you asking?
Yes.
Well, because usually I wouldn't. Usually with an EM, I don't like to typically go do a day spa on them because typically they need a lot more loving care. First, they're very old, probably haven't got much love over the years, need a lot of stuff done to them. And, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours on site is not going to cut it typically. Typically, I need to bring them in-house and do 40 to 100 hours worth of work and go through every single switch and stepper and everything. But in this case, this guy called me up. He's a professor at a college out there, older gentleman, his wife. And for the first time in a year, because of all the stuff going on the past year or so, he actually got his grandchildren were going to come over for once. You know, they got the all clear to come over. He hadn't seen him for a long time. So he wanted this game running. And I said, well, first of all, I can come out there, but does the game work? Can you play a game on it? That's number one. And he said, yes. I said, number two, okay, so what's the issue? A broken rubber. I said, okay. If it actually works. Yeah. So
it's not uncommon.
Oh, I know. It's a broken flipper rubber is blocking the ball. It couldn't go all the way down after they played several games of it, you know, and the children were there and, you know, they're only there for a week. They're there for the first day playing it and now it's down and it's like, you know,
You're Mr. Softy.
And I was Mr. Softy. It's like, you know, I want to see these kids, these, you know, young girls, or I don't know, maybe I want to say 5 and 9, you know, grandchildren. It's like, I want to see them have a good time with the game and, you know, make new memories with the grandparents. Like, all right, you got me. I'll take the 2-hour and 45-minute ride one way with Maureen out there and then spend like, oh, I don't know, was it 4? I think it was 4 or 5 hours on site. You know, that's a long day. But we got it all done and it had a couple hiccups. And I told him, it's like, this is going to probably have some hiccups because I couldn't, I shopped it out, new rubber, cleaned the play field, lights, all kinds of lighting, little problems, you know, hit all the high points, but I could not hit everything in that time. But the game played, but it did have a couple hiccups. Sometimes we'd stay on ball 5 a couple times too long. It wouldn't go to game over sometimes. Reset it. It would be fine. It's like, this is going to probably still have problems down the road, but you're playing at least for now. So the good thing is, though, it lasted the whole week they played since the grandkids left there. So they had a great time with it. But then shortly after that, it's having more problems. So I wound up actually hooking them up with an EM guy that's out maybe 40 minutes south. Is the name of the place is Arcade. I think the guy's name is Rich. I talked to him for a while, and I hooked those two up together. Because he can probably hit it, you know, a lot more inexpensively than me going out there.
And it's closer.
Closer.
What game was it?
It is called Flying Carpet. It is a Williams. Is it Williams? No.
I think I remember that game.
All right. Gottlieb one player.
And actually, right, it's got the guy on the flying carpet on the back glass.
Is a guy on the. Yes, there is.
Right.
I don't know who he is, but yes. And this is, it's right.
Him.
Popular game. People like that game. So that was that little foray into the western part of the state. Let's see. Then I did a funhouse day spa with and put a playfield protector on that and Framingham, and then did Indiana Jones. Oh boy. This one was another one of these
games. I thought you swore that game off.
No, I don't like to give up. I might have to take a pause and go think about it and lick my wounds and go home and, you know, come back later with better armed, you know, for battle. I decided, well, you know what? I felt encouraged because for the longest time, there was a bonsai run out in Western Mass that this couple, they live in Florida, but they come up to this lake house they live at. Maybe 2 months.
Right, you had talked about this in a previous episode.
Right. So I fixed that weird problem that was going on for a long time. I finally got all the gremlins out of it. That was a long multi-year.
Right. That's another long ride.
Long ride. So this one, Indiana Jones, was a lot like that. It was a lot like this Ghost in the Machine, and this thing had history of Ghost in the Machine, and it's gone to different places, and you know. So I said, you know what? I'm ready. I have all the boards I need. I have all the parts I need. I'm going to figure this out, you know? So I went up there. I installed a brand new driver board, or a driver board I rebuilt. Yeah, I didn't drive. And then I also did a brand new, that Basement Arcade new CPU board. I threw one of them in there too, for good measure, just to kind of, you know, but I think what really fixed it was the driver board. The driver board had some issues on it. And then the game's been bulletproof since. He played the crap out of his wife for like about a week straight to give it a good test. And he said, you know what, Doc? You did it.
Smart.
Thing is bulletproof. So another win. Another one in the win column there. Right now, presently, I am hitting my head against a 8-ball champ I have here to restore for a customer who's waiting since December for this one. And yeah, it's doing some weird stuff. So, you know, I was talking to John Day about this a while ago. It's like, I can repair, you know, circuit boards and that kind of thing. But at some point when you're repairing and you go back to the well over and over again, and it's still not right. And it's like, you know, troubleshooting it. It's like, you know, at some point it's not worth it to keep going there. Just buy a new board, you know? And I think when I decided to do it today, made the executive decision to buy a new power driver board for this 8-ball champ. Because it had a big burn mark in the back of it anyway from a short it had.
Wouldn't that be a clue right from the start?
Well, yeah. And I and And I try to, you know, fix the short, and I try to, and it's like, no. And it kept, like, you know, blowing the main
MacGyver.
Yeah, blowing the main fuse and sparking. And I thought I blew other crap up, but I didn't, thank God. It has a squawk and talk board like the 8-Ball Deluxes and Fathoms of the World. So it's a talker, you know, it has the same board as the other Bally's, but the other boards that it has in it are different than your old school Bally. So I rebuilt the squawk and talk and actually put that in my Fathom, and it tests out great. All the sounds are fine for 8-Ball Champ. I put in the 8-Ball Champ, it boots up in there, but I can never get it to talk in the 8-Ball Champ for some freaking reason. Then I even put another speaker on it. I still can't get it. So it's like, you know what? I said, that's it. I'm putting a new power driver in here. There's something wrong with this. It's not getting the right voltage. There's something going on with it. So I'm just going to, you know, I'm doing that. Throw the towel in on that one, and I can move on. So that's the one that's giving me fits of the exact game. Oh, no, and the Super Bowl Mania I'm doing. For another customer that's been waiting for a little bit for it, I want to get that done by May as well. That's up and running, even with a new Weebly board in it. But it's had some ghosts. It's doing some weird stuff once in a while. So I have to figure out that too. So the two kind of problem childs. But these days, I'll tell you, working on the WPC 90 stuff, those are a cakewalk compared to working on the old school.
It's probably why people are gravitating towards those machines. At least partial reason. Mine have been great. I've, knock on wood.
Oh yeah, mine
turn them on and they play. If you do all the connectors, we're just reiterating what we've talked about a million times. But connectors.
Yeah, it's true, and also sockets. The sockets on these older Bally's.
If you're going to redo them, I know you drill them out. I just snip them or, you know, unsolder them and put all, if you don't want to have a problem, if you want to have a problem free game, you take every light socket out and you put a new one in. Well, and not then that you have no problems.
Well, that's one socket. I'm talking actually IC socket, chip socket.
Oh, okay. Well, those two.
So chip socket, they have this thing called, their brand name is Ugot, something like that. Ugot or,
AUGUT or AT.
Yeah. That was a bad one. Augit. Yeah, Augit. And there's another one that's bad. That's the name escapes me at the moment, but it's another notoriously El Stinkaroo that Williams used a lot of in their stuff. And actually old school Bally did too. The Dash 17 boards use this one. I'll think of it later. But yeah, on the I tested the 8-Ball Champ out with, you know, I put new ROMs in it. I learned a lot about jumpering the squawk and talk board too, to accommodate different size ROMs that I put in there. But I try to test it out. It would say all its speed stuff, then all of a sudden it would do a garbled thing and then keep going. It's like, what the frick is this? So when I took out the speech chip, I noticed it came out pretty easily. The other ones are kind of a little bit more, you know, holding on the legs really good. They had to really give it some effort with a screwdriver to take them out. The speech one is a little too easy to come out. It's like, okay, that's suspect. And it's an Ugot or whatever, Ogot.
And how about Oh God?
Oh God, yeah. And I put a new one in there, and now, fine, no more garble. So that was that. That fixed that, you know, that socket there. So that's that one there. And so those are two big ones. And the other one, there's three problem children I have here that I'm trying to get out by May or within May. And I can bring the cash
right. You're running out of runway, my friend. The end of the week is May.
Well, within May, because I'll tell you, I'm taking them.
And that only gives you another 4 weeks.
I'll get it done, because I pretty much, Silver Bowl Mania is pretty much done. I just got to hunt down the gremlins.
Gremlin, gremlin, gremlin. Nice gremlin. Woo!
Black Knight is done, except it has a soundboard gremlin that when I use the Black Knight soundboards I have, it doesn't do anything. It can't hear anything out of it. But when I put in a Firepower speech board in there, it plays a Firepower sound, so it works fine. So what I did, I had some friends over, and I basically I it says Black Knight in the back class. Over the word knight, I put power. So we play Black Power.
Hey, all correspondence gets directed to Dr. Dave at Dr. Dave whatever. Listen to the end of the program. Do not throw vats of hot oil at George, flaming arrows, or any other large rock or device.
Bring it on. But I have a new soundboard coming that just came in. So I'm going to be putting that in the Black Knight. Since the fire power board is out, I took the power label off. Now it's back to Black Knight again. That's going to be going in this week and hopefully delivering that game within a week or two. And that game's out of here. So Romania, hopefully that will be out of here in about a week or two. That's going to go down to Southern Connecticut.
We need to play that before it goes because
a
couple of tie-ins on that game. It's not one of my favorite games, but I'm very curious and excited to play it only because I saw it being played at the Great Lakes Classic that took place last weekend. We'll talk more about it when we do the show on it. I don't want to do it here. It doesn't make sense. It does make sense for later on. But okay. Interesting game. Not one of my favorites, but an interesting game nonetheless.
Yeah, it's some nice stuff in the game we can talk about, once we go there. But yeah, I hope to have that one done. We'll definitely get to play it before it goes. I'm thinking like a probably 2 weeks. I'm thinking that'll be gone, hopefully out of here. And then 8-Ball Champ, I want that out of here middle of May or end of May latest, because the end of May, we're actually going to take our first vacation, actually a real vacation in a long time. Now that New Hampshire is a little more opened up.
And where are you going?
Going to go up north to north of Campton, New Hampshire, up that way. North of Laconia?
Yeah. Well, it's not right near Waterville Valley.
Yeah,
it's actually that. They hold a big blues festival there at a big farm in August. I don't know if it's going off this year, but it has in the past.
Okay.
Nice area.
I found an Airbnb a couple places up there. One place is really nice, has a nice big deck out back overlooking the mountains, and you're up high and it's like, okay, it looks like I can chill there, but the reason to go up there is that I got a bunch of people going to meet them at a campground and hang out, barbecue, that kind of thing, that same Memorial Day week or weekend. So I figured, well, let's just, instead of going up there for the day, let's go up for the week. And also hitting Fun Spot as well. They do like freedom rallies at Fun Spot. So I want to hit that too. And
you bring a pinball machine with you to set up at the house or the campground?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. It's crossed my mind. I'm gonna see. I don't know. It's like part of me says I should take a break from it because Fun Spot has their stuff anyway. I'd play that. I'd play their stuff, but we'll see. I might do that. I don't know. Depends how motivated I get. I want to try to relax and not be hoofing a pinball machine in and out of a car and setting it up and take it back down again. I have done it before with a Joker Poker. I've done that before up in a similar situation a couple of years ago. Went away for a week and did that a couple times, and that was fun. So yeah, I'm gonna get away and do that. So I want these three games gone before then, so I can chill out and relax. I just started into waiting for parts for these other three games. I just broke ground on a Superman. I have three Superman play fields that are all touched up and automotive clear coated. So I'm going to be restoring one for customers waiting for like a year for this. So I found some time yesterday, beautiful day, 70 degrees out. So I wanted to basically take advantage of the nice weather. John Day made me this beautiful playfield rotisserie. He put the Superman playfield on there and just like I had the whole playfield harness from all these games in different boxes. So I just pulled it out of the box, laid it down on top of the playfield, and the wire and loom and stuff all has memory. You just have to spread it out a little bit and they all find where they want to go. It's great. And you just can kind of sock them all down. And then I get it all on there and then I can rebuild while I go, So So I got that done. And a couple more things. So that's that. And then let's see, went to East Longmeadow to work on something. Oh, whatever. Oh, another Adams Family, East Longmeadow. Sudbury worked on a Twilight Zone and a Popeye, two super pins. Popeye doesn't get much love, but and I can see why, but it's kind of a cute game.
I gave it the benefit of the doubt. I played it when I was out in Houston. Too much play field covered up.
There is, and I gave it some nice blue LEDs and the pop bumpers up there to kind of get some more light up there, and I made the best Popeye could be, put it that way. But
and I love Popeye. I think, you know, the older 40s cartoons are great.
Oh yeah.
But I don't, that game does nothing for me. I gave it the benefit of the doubt, but no.
Yeah, not, it's, you know what? I wonder if you can buy a Popeye for these, a nice Popeye. What does that go for? That must be cheap. $2,000 maybe?
Dave, there is no such thing anymore. I'll get back to you. I'll take a look. I haven't seen one recently, and I don't know how many were made, but I'll do some homework on that. I have a question regarding parts. Are you finding parts shortages anywhere, or are you pretty much able to get what you need? I know you have, you know, inventory, but are you finding any issues with trying to acquire parts?
No, I'd say there are some longer wait times on boards sometimes, like these new boards that some of these cottage industries, these little manufacturers I know that do my boards, that do brand new boards for me. Sometimes the wait times are a month. I have to wait for sometimes a little longer to them to, cause they're waiting for components for their boards. So yeah, that's about all for that. For regular components, like other stuff, I'm ordering from your typical Pinball Life, Pinball Resource, and I'm getting that stuff. I don't have to wait from them at all. It's just basically the new board people. They're the ones that have some supply chain issues more than anybody else, but I'm not waiting 6 months. I'm waiting, like, you know, 2 weeks
longer than normal, but not crazy long.
Not too crazy.
I have a question about a part as well. You mentioned, you know, when you do day spas, that you've been using clear rubbers.
Yes.
Do you ever use clear rubbers on any of the old Stern or Bally games?
Not yet. I haven't yet. I think what they really tend to look best on is when you start putting warm LEDs in the GI, like the warm whites or even some reds or whatever, that's when they kind of really shine that light through nice to, for that. So I've been doing it for those, for, you know, for the 90s stuff and even late 80s stuff. So I have not experimented yet with the old school with doing that. I have though experimented with going with, clear pop bumper skirts on old school, so you can see right to the playfield instead of having that skirt, you know, opaque, you can't see. I did that on my Kingpin, my Gottlieb Kingpin. And there's also, they also make different colored skirts, like see-through red, like transparent red, transparent green, blah, blah, blah. And you can even match that with a transparent red or green or whatever color you want, body for the newer games or the Williams type games. So I've been experimenting with that.
I'm seeing more people do that with pop bumper skirts, but my question was more, you know, clear rubber. And I think I'm going to buy a couple of pieces in my next order. I'm trying to figure out what I need. A couple of games I've been playing a lot of and stuff wears out. So I'll re-rubber the games up, thinking, mate, you know, I do use some colored rubbers sometimes, but not many. It's mostly white.
Yeah, I like, if I'm going to use white rubber, it's either white or clear or white or translucent, they call it, for rubber rings and blah, blah, blah. But for, you know, the 90s games with their post sleeves, I definitely buy an assortment of colors for that, because that's when you really can really get creative in different colors for the posts and that kind of thing. But actually for ring color itself, I don't go for the yellows or oranges or that kind of thing. I will experiment with different flipper rubber color, there's a whole bunch you can do with that. But, you know, the majority of time, though, I'll tell you, the really bright red they give that Pinball Life sells, the Perfect Play ones, or the bright yellow they sell, those do really well. I like how those look on a game typically, unless it's something really that stands out. I might change it to like a blue or a green, you know, like maybe Lord of the Rings or something. But the
all my games have different colored rubbers. I experiment with them and I take them out regularly because I think that makes the biggest difference in a game. Fresh flipper rubbers, even if you don't do everything else, it just gives a better feel to the game. So I've been replacing those more often than not just to get better grip on the ball.
Are you using the Perfect Play silicone stuff or regular?
I have those. I have Titans. I have stuff from Mark. I have old Haps, which I loved. That was my favorite rubber until they went defunct. Mm. I don't know who bought the molds for that, but you can't buy Hap rubbers anymore. Those used to be great.
Yeah, a lot of the regular rubber you buy these days, depending where you get it from, it goes bad in like a year or two. It starts getting
it breaks down. I like the silicone better, but yes, a lot of my games have rubber, and I still have a rubber inventory. So, you know, I'm not going to throw the stuff away. I'll just use it up and put it in lesser games. I got a box full. I'm sure you've got a box full. If you have any number of games, you always have a box of rubbers.
Well, what I do is I keep the old school rubber. I have a bunch of that. And for the budget conscious customers I have out there that, you know, don't want to go full boat and whatever, you know, I'll give them the cheaper option of, and they don't really care about rubber that much. I'll go with my El Cheapo rubber for those. But I don't usually go too much. So, you know, I definitely like using the silicone. It's a better product, lasts longer, playfield stays cleaner. So I don't like using the regular, unless the guy is, you know, really, you know, tight with the buck, then we'll go with the,
right. If you got leftovers, that's where they go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even all the rubbers aren't cheap anymore. Even that stuff's creeping up now.
Yeah. I've been buying, I don't know, at least a couple grand a month on parts and stuff. I've been buying.
My. Yep. That's a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I buy bulk rubber. I buy bulk everything.
Oh, good. You're busy. Is there anything else on your list you want to talk about? We've been going about an hour.
So there's two more things on the list to bring up to date. So we got the Pokerino thing. I still have to go back on that one. I have to go back on the Twilight Zone again and do a Twilight Zone clock update with one of those Ingo boards. And then just did a Road Kings in Framingham. A real quick job on that one. He just wanted a couple things fixed. He's going to move soon, move the game. He doesn't really care. So I wasn't going to do a whole bunch. So, but Road King's a kind of cool game. It's plastic back glass, or not even a glass, but you know what I'm saying. And it's kind of a Road Warrior theme. It's the Road Warrior, but it's Road Kings. It looks like a Road Warrior ripoff from that time frame. And I think they made that game as like a cheap fill-in game between other games. I think Mark Ritchie did the game. I think it's a Mark Ritchie. But I remember playing this game back in the day, and in the arcade, it's like, and since I like Mad Max and Road Warrior, I like it because of that theme, and it sounds like it a little bit. So I did that one, and then the last one I just did, I just picked up that Twilight Zone from the one that he got wanted to sell it to me, so I got that. And then going out this week to work on a Terminator 2, and then working on a Firepower. Been getting lots of Firepower calls and requests for restorations lately on Firepowers a lot.
You see Jay this weekend? And is there an update with what's going on in Worcester?
Yes. Well, here's the update. So I guess Rhode Island is going all back to real normal, they say. Not this new normal stuff, a real normal. That's what Jay was saying. They said, you mean they're going to actually take down all the plastic dividers you can be able to eat, drink at the bar, eat at the bar at the arcade in Rhode Island in about 2 weeks. They're going to take all the plastic stuff down, all the requirements. I go, wow, that's great. Because I know New Hampshire is doing that too. They have, or they're in the process of it.
Yeah, we're kind of in the process of it right now, but on May 7th, no more mask mandate by the state, but towns can adopt their own policy. And I think if I heard correctly, 8 or 10 towns have a policy already in place, all the bigger cities, obviously. So
yeah, the cities are the ones that are going to be hardcore with it, and the towns aren't going to be as bad, you know, that kind of thing.
That's kind of the impression I get.
People are going to go where they're comfortable with. If you're a little more on the fearful side and that kind of thing, you're going to go more towards where there's more rules in place and that kind of thing. If you're more towards, like, you know, not as fearful, you're more towards the freedom side of things, you're going to go to places that, you know, and to each their own. And people that cater to each one of those groups, they're going to make out by catering to each one of those groups. So free play in Rhode Island is going to be going back, at least what Jay's thinking, what the governor's saying, is back to no restrictions, no whatever. And you can go eat or drink at a bar, and no plastic dividers, no masks, nothing, just all, you know, party hardy dudes, you know, that kind of thing. So that's going to be a great thing. He's looking forward to that. And he's saying that he's hoping that he gets guidance from Governor Baker for this state, that he can maybe open up in June and do the Worcester one in June. If Governor Baker, you know, plays ball like New Hampshire and Rhode Island are.
I feel so bad for Jay. This has been ongoing. And the reason I bring it up is we promised him that when, you know, things open for him, we'd come back and do, you know, another podcast with him. I'm excited to do that, but we did that back in the fall, Dave.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, he's just sitting there with a big space with games in it with no people.
You know what I keep doing? I keep feeding him, because I get a bunch of people calling me for game repair, and I get a lot of people wanting video game repair, and I don't usually do that unless it's something simple or something I want to deal with, but usually just pinball stuff for me. So I'll actually hand them off to Jay, because Jay will do in-home video game calls if it's within his reach that he can get to and make sense for him. So I've been giving him all my video game calls that come in. So I've been keeping him busy with that, making some money, and also hooking him up with different buys. Like, I'll get a customer that wants to sell me a video game, a pinball machine, or whatever. It's like, well, I'll take the pinball machine, I'll bring a buddy of mine, we'll buy your video game. So I'll hook up with Jay, we'll figure out what we want to pay, and we'll both hit it together, and he gets what he wants, I get what I want. And the beauty of it is Jay has this awesome this huge van that can accommodate anything. I mean, the thing is, it's a monster, and with ramps and everything. And so I can't really fit the rampers typically in my car these days. The other old school games I can, but not the big ramp games don't fit, the DMD stuff. So I gotta fix that situation down the road. But for right now, Jay's there with me, so we just load it in his van and bring it back here, and it's all works well. I talked to Ivan the other day about the Allentown show, and I guess there's still thing to put it on. I was going to try to maybe pick up some glass from him, because I'm running low on my playfield glass.
July, right?
I think July. And I don't know. That's another state that's pretty tightly.
You got to wait until we get closer and you get more information.
If things are screwed down, I don't want to go to that, you know, and people that are, you know, people don't want to go to that for several different reasons, but it all comes down to it. People don't want to go to it, no matter what their reason.
Right. Well, you know what? As I say, and somebody took, again, I don't want to go down the pin side route, but, you know, people were beating up on somebody because the guy was trashing on, the Pin Brew Fest. You know,
yeah.
We interviewed Keith.
Sure.
And then the guy ends up going.
Real? Wow.
Right.
And he crashed him the whole time and then went.
He took two barrels from a lot of people. People were just blasting them. And I said, you know, why would you, you know, if you have nothing good to say, don't say anything else at all. You know, don't say anything about it. I don't know. Did you happen to see any of the pictures from Pinbrew Fest? It looked like a really nice facility. Everything was all spread out, and it didn't look like a lot of people there. But
it looks sparse, though. It looks sparsely popular. Like with, I don't know if they probably didn't make any money from what I saw. You know,
I don't disagree, but I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it looked like a great venue. You had a lot of, you know, a fair amount of machines, beer, and food trucks. I mean, if he does the same thing next year, and all this is gone, I think he's going to do very well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if all this was gone and it's all back to, you know, party like it's 2019 or 18 or whatever, I'd be there because I'd want to go to, while I'm out there, I'd want to hit that Cedar Point Park.
Yeah, I know. You want to go ride the roller coasters.
I want to ride that Millennium Force roller coaster. I want to hit that. So I'll stay there for a week or two. And I gotta clear up my boss that I can get away for a couple weeks. Hold on, let me ask him. Hey, can I go away for a couple weeks? Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, he's the best boss ever. Oh, yeah, it's me. That's right.
Sandusky, Ohio. I drove through there. That's a big amusement park.
It's a roller coaster park, really, is what it is. It's that one in Kings Island to the south is also a nice roller coaster park. A little more light in the coasters, but they have what's it called? I want to call it the Beast, but maybe it is the Beast. You know what? It's called the Beast. Yeah, it's an old wooden roller coaster called the Beast, and it's in Kings Island. Is it called Kings Dominion? It's either Kings Dominion or Kings Island. I don't know. Anyway, it's near the same area. I think it's in Indiana, and it's pretty. It's like an old mine ride, and it goes on forever. I swear this thing's like a 3-minute ride, and it goes the first hill. Goes up high and it goes down and you go down into like a hole in the earth, into the dark, like full speed. And then you come popping right,
like
out.
like a mine shaft.
Like a mine shaft. You come out and you go over hill and dale through like forest area with all these trees around. It's like, and you go for a long time that way. So it's a real nice, it's a real different ride. And the good thing about that, even though it's a wooden coaster, you don't get your brain shaken up like some of these ones. Like there's one called the Mean Streak in Sandusky, and it's mean, all right. It's a wooden roller coaster, but you get your brain shaken up the whole time. You get a headache by the time you're done with that coaster. Fun ride, exciting ride, very thrilling, but not worth the headache. So these days, especially now, especially with, you know, as age creeps on you more and more, I go more for the smooth steel coasters that have nice smooth power, no shaky, but lots of nice acceleration. And I think the Millennium Force goes about 92 miles an hour. So that's fine with me.
It's been a while, but yes, I like roller coasters too.
Well, we should, you know what, if this all happens, we should go out to there and get that all done. We can hit the coast.
Hey, once things start returning back in time, I'm going to the West Coast. I know, I don't know if you heard this as well. The museum, the Pinball Museum in Banning, California, where InDisc was held, where I went. People are sick of hearing me talk about this. They are moving to Palm Springs, which is awesome. So out of the middle of nowhere to civilization.
Palm Springs is where?
In the desert. It's where all the movie stars used to go. You know, quote unquote, back in the day, you know, the Bob Hopes, the Bing Crosbys of the world. Banning is not even a one horse town. So leave it at that.
Oh, Banning. Yeah. Okay. Cause that was where it was last time, right?
Yes. Banning. That's where it's been. And, they're moving. So stay tuned, I guess. I'm excited. Okay. So sign me up.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, I don't know. I like to go. I do enjoy the Allentown thing, you know, under normal circumstances, you know, and if things are normal again, sure, I'll hit that. As for other stuff, I mean, I don't mind taking long road trips here and there for different stuff. So we'll see where things go.
Well, I'll cross that bridge, like you said. We'll see. I'd like to go to Allentown as well. You know, I usually go with my buddy Jack and stay at his place in Jersey and then drive over. Not sure whether he'd be into it or not, but I'm not making that decision until a week or two before.
Yeah, same here.
And, you know, I know we could end it on this. I know you've seen what's going on with Pentastic. Well, you know, that's way out. So let's see how that goes out in November.
Well, by then, well, yeah, by
don't,
then.
Don't even say it.
Okay.
You don't know. You don't that's know. True. Nobody
you
don't knows.
Know. Yeah. Well, you hope you hope that other, like the Rhode Islands, the New Hampshires, the Floridas of the world, they all prove to the rest of these states, like, look, we're back to normal. Everything's good. We're making money. Why aren't you guys? You know, and we're fine. No one's dropping dead. We're all cool. You know, so if they prove that out, it's kind of, they have to, the other states have to follow suit and do the right thing by the people.
Well, one would think. We'll say time will tell. I'm definitely considering strongly going to Florida in November for the Worlds. You've heard me talk about that for over a year. I can certainly go do that. I think the big question is, will I be able to get in and watch? And again, I think that's the, you know, we talked to David about that. I think that's the million-dollar question. What's that going to look like? But that's November, so time will tell.
Dave!
Who?
Dave! D-A-V-E! Yeah, Dave!
Dave!
Right.
So anyone out there that wants to explore getting their games worked on, getting their games restored, or buying a restored game from me, you can check out my website at pinballdoctor.com. That's pinballdoctor, all spelled out. Or you can reach me at dave@pinballdoctor.com. Or you can reach me at drdavespinball@gmail.com. And that's DRDAVES pinball@gmail.com.